WTBQ. Hello and welcome to Shannon's Corner. I am Shannon Devereaux Sanford, and thank you so much for joining us here today on your favorite, radio station, WTBQ. And don't forget, we are now 93.5 FM, as well as our very faithful 1110 AM. And I hope you're doing well today. I hope everyone you know is doing well today. And I hope no one is having any issues, big issues. You know, obviously in the country, we're having some big issues with another shooting, which is, of course, very jarring and very difficult for us all. Luckily, you know, it doesn't happen. I mean, it happens a lot more than it should, but I think it's like airplane crashes. I mean, we are not that susceptible to it, but it's still very upsetting. And we're going to talk today about healing yourself. You know, I was just about to say, if you or anybody you know is ill and has a bad diagnosis of cancer or something like that, we're going to talk today about the art of healing, uncovering your inner wisdom and potential for self-healing. Dr. Bernie Siegel, who many of you know, everyone knows, I think definitely Dr. Bernie Siegel is a household name. His bestseller, Love, Medicine, and Miracles, was just an incredible bestseller. And this is a follow-up book, and it talks about healing, and we're going to talk about that today because this is a very different form of healing, something I've never heard about, something I'm very interested in and very surprised to hear about. And we're going to talk about how you can heal and understanding your potential, which is really the interesting thing here, that you have some power inside of you. And I want to welcome Dr. Bernie Siegel to Shannon's Corner. How are you today?
Oh, I tell people never to ask me that, Shannon.
Oh, why never to ask you that?
Because people never tell the truth. Everybody walks by you saying, how are you today?
This is true.
But they want you to say fine. And if I need to share something, I say, do you really want to know how I am? So, you know, we need to be open to that. I mean it. And not deny our needs. You know, you talk about the healing. When you deny your needs, you know, I mean, people learn they have cancer. I don't want to upset my family. But then they're not having their needs met. So they're less likely to do well if they're putting on a performance to make everybody else happy versus sharing with others and telling them what they need. And the other answer is that if you can't do it, you say no, but at least you ask, that you don't say no to yourself all the time by doing what everyone else wants.
Well, that's really true. You know, and also, well, when you say that, I think how many people would actually be very pleased to be able to hear you say, I'm not doing so great today, and lend a helping hand or a listening shoulder to lean on. I mean, right. I think most people would be honored that if you didn't just give the pat answer.
Well, you know what I tell people, because this really happened. I always say I go to Stop and Shop for therapy, because I interact with everybody, because I know everybody in the store has a problem. And I mean that literally. We're all wounded. And one day as I was checking out, a lady poked me in the back. I turn around. She had a bandage over her eye. She said, and this quote impressed me, you are the only person in Stop and Shop who hasn't asked me what happened. Can you imagine? Everybody is talking to her because she has a visible wound. Now, my sense of humor, I said to her, well, I know what happened. I have an abusive spouse also. And then she didn't know what to do with me. But I said, I'm kidding. But I then told her, I'm a doctor, so seeing a bandage didn't affect me, you know, the way it did everybody else. But I always say to people, go to work with a bandage over your eye. You know, go shopping and watch how many people start telling you their troubles.
Yeah.
I mean, I shaved my head. Oh, all these memories are coming back. In the 1970s, when the guys were wearing their hair down to their shoulders, and everybody at the hospital lined up to talk to me. And I realized they know I've got a problem, you know, because look what I've done. And so they literally lined up in the hallway when I'd be making rounds to talk to me about their troubles. And that impressed me, that once they knew I had my wounds, then it was okay to talk. What I call the natives, you know, the wounded can talk to each other and help each other.
And, well, and it's such a relief to be able to talk about something that's bothering us. But for most of us, we feel we don't want to talk about it. We want it to go away. I mean, you're a well-known doctor. You're certainly a well-known writer. You know, people can maybe talk to you, feel a little bit more comfortable. But so many of us are afraid to expose ourselves, let's put it that way, to even ourselves or even those closest. We should be stronger. We should hold all this in. We should handle it well. But it's part of the human condition, as you said, to have issues.
Well, it's how we're brought up, you know, and that just, again, how are you? Fine. Yeah. What's wrong? Nothing. And you put on a performance. Mm-hmm. What shocked me was, again, decades ago, sending 100 letters to people with cancer saying, you want to live a longer, better life, come to a meeting.
Come to a meeting.
One of my patients had said, you know, I need to know how to live between office visits. And I thought, if I help people live, then I've done something for them, even if I couldn't cure their disease as a doctor. And I expected hundreds of people to respond to the 100 letters that went out, you know, that you would tell your friends and neighbors and relatives to come. And less than a dozen women showed up.
What was the meeting?
Oh, well, if you have cancer, 100 uh-huh. people with cancer were sent a letter saying, you want to live a longer, better life, come to a meeting that we would, you know, teaching them what you call survival behavior, mm-hmm. you know, how to exceed expectations, how to live up to your potential. And I thought everybody'd show up. Isn't
right.
that natural?
You're right.
And, but what I learned was, no, it's not natural because they've grown up with guilt, blame, and shame. So if I go to the meeting and I don't do well, then I, you know, I'm a failure again and I'm embarrassing everybody. And I did, well, like my latest book, The Art of Healing, has 70 drawings in it. And people would say, I'm not an artist.
Right.
Because I'd say, draw yourself, your treatment, your immune system, your home and family, you know, whatever we were interested in helping them with. Draw yourself in the operating room to see what unconsciously you're feeling about this, and we can then improve it if it's a negative image. And I'm not an artist. Or I had my child, who's 10, do this for me. And I thought, you know, you're confronting cancer and you're afraid to get a poor grade in art.
You really, so, when you're looking death in the face, I don't think that this is your biggest worry. But the first question that comes to mind, and I'm actually looking at the pictures, and they're all very colorful and interesting and very primitive and very unprofessional, which makes them very charming. But the first thing I would think about is someone like you, and I was ill, asking me to draw a picture, I'd be very self-conscious and I'd be very concerned. And I don't know if I would trust your interpretation of it. How do you interpret a picture?
See, it's, in a sense, not me interpreting it.
Uh-huh.
It's you interpreting it.
Oh, okay.
So that I will point out things to you that might look funny. I mean, one, it isn't in the book, but just let me give you an example. That a woman, the night before surgery, I said, draw a picture of yourself. And she added her son. Why is he in it? Oh, he's a part of me. Now, her right arm was longer than her left arm. His arm was going off the page, his left arm. And I said, you know, what's that about? She said, oh, we're reaching for my husband. He's never there when you need him.
Uh-huh.
You see, and she's got this big grin on her face the night before surgery with all these troubles, obviously, in her life. You see, she's putting on the performance. How are you? Fine.
Gotcha.
But the husband isn't there. You're facing surgery. Why are you denying all this? And so it would come out. I called it making the invisible visible. See, what would come out in the drawing was what was going on at the unconscious, intuitive level. Again, if I say, draw yourself in the operating room, some people will draw themselves lying on a table in a black box. I mean, it's an empty room. And I say, then don't have it. Don't go or change doctors. Or we can change your image. See, they can go home, picture themselves having surgery, doing beautifully, you know, waking up comfortable, hungry, going home quickly. You do that 3 or 4 times a day. A week later, you got a totally different picture. The operating room is filled with caring, you know, health professionals. God's light is shining in the window. The family's waiting right outside for you. It's a totally different experience. Now, the other side of the coin is also important. There are people who say, I don't want that treatment.
Right.
And they draw a beautiful picture of it.
Uh-huh.
And I say to them, this is really good for you, but what you're afraid of are all the side effects, you know, like the commercials on television. I mean, the doctors tend to tell you what could go wrong so they don't get sued, but they don't start out with how good this may be for you. And so people will have a lot of fear and say, well, then I'm not going to do that. But yet they draw a beautiful picture. And I can say to them, you know, this is good for you. It's okay. Go ahead. You'll do well.
One of the things, let me interrupt you here. You're talking about surgery and people going into surgery and then drawing a picture. And of course, we would all be frightened. And you would maybe attempt to give them or somehow get them a Siegel kit. Now, a Siegel kit to me seems a very interesting thing. That my first thought is, tell us what's in the Siegel kit and explain what it is. It's a noisemaker, a water gun. I mean, why would we need this in surgery?
It was to help people keep their power. See, the word patient means a submissive sufferer. If you're a good patient, you're literally more likely to die of a medical error because, you know, you're a room number and a disease. You're not a person, so they can come in and give you the wrong treatment. But if you become what I call a respondent, a responsible participant, they know you. You know what I mean? They know your name. They may even call you grandma. You know, they give you a nickname because you're driving them all nuts. But the Siegel kit was, number one, a magic marker. If you're going to the operating room, you see, and you have breast cancer, let's say on the left side, or your left knee needs surgery, you can write cut here, and then on the other side, you write not this one, stupid. And again, the staff laughs, you become a person.
Right.
You know? And a lot of hospitals are giving people magic markers, but they don't tell them to write on the other side, you know, because the doctor could, you know, uncover you and put the brakes on and still make the mistake.
Right, exactly.
The noisemaker, literally, I mean, so many people think it's funny. A woman went to visit her sister, and I always say, I don't make up these stories. She said to her sister, I have something important I need to discuss with you. Her sister pushes the call button. She said, what are you doing? I need to talk to you. She said, don't worry. We will now have 1 hour of uninterrupted silence. You see, I mean, this is what people begin to feel in the hospital. You push the button, nobody shows up.
Right.
Where is everybody?
Well,
and I know some people who literally would be dead today if they didn't have a roommate who could run out and get help for them. And so I say, bring a noisemaker.
Mm-hmm.
So if nobody responds to the call button, you make a racket and get somebody in there. And the water gun was brought to the hospital by a 19-year-old who came in to die. I mean, he wasn't fighting that. He knew it was time. But he wanted to have time with his girlfriend, with his parents, so he would shut his door to have privacy. And people would come in for meaningless reasons. You know, it could be empty a wastebasket, take your temperature. They could have waited 10 minutes. And he would take out this high-powered water gun and drench them. Oh, and over his bed he had a sign, intern shot on sight. And the, you know, when he died, the nurses realized what he had done. He had been able to, in a sense, express his anger without hurting anyone and empower himself. So they, the mother gave the gun to them to give to other kids. And the nurses would say to the child, here's a water gun. If anybody hurts you, squirt them.
Mm-hmm.
And that empowered the kids. You know, they weren't afraid then because they had their tool also.
So it sounds like hospitals are not necessarily, I mean, we know that they're healing places in many ways, but we also have heard that they're very dangerous places to be. How can we get ourselves emotionally prepared to get well or to come through the surgery safely and correctly? I mean, is there something emotionally, I mean, your book talks about healing and intuition. I mean, what does that have to do with, you know, your bum knee or something even worse, cancer?
Well, it's, as I said, visualizing, I mean, the book has a lot more than just the drawing, but it's a lot more. Again, about, you know, how to empower yourself, really. And it is speaking up, expressing anger, I mean, appropriate anger. You know, if you're not treated with respect in the hospital, you say something. You notice that the best doctors and nurses accept your criticism. If they have never been a patient, they don't know. So it's all right to speak up and tell them, you know, that there's a better way of doing something. And the good ones will say thank you. The others will make an excuse. Tell them you don't want them to be your nurse anymore. So, again, it's, you know, speaking up and letting people know your needs and desires. And the imagery, as I mentioned before, too, to not keep living in fear and picturing the worst things that could happen, but picturing the best things that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And to know that you're the one making the decision. See, if somebody says to you, you need an operation, you can say no. It's your life.
You can say no.
Are you trying not to die or do what's right for you? And so you can refuse to eat vegetables or have an operation. Let me add one more that was in the drawing. I think it's in the book, where the young lady, the parents brought her to me saying she won't go back for any more chemotherapy. I said, draw a picture. She drew a picture with herself saying, I hate you. So my instinct was, you hate cancer. She said, no, I don't hate cancer. Look on the page. The cancer's crying and saying, help me. The cancer and I are going through hell. I hate my doctor. They made me bald, ugly, and horrible.
Uh-huh.
See? And she wants to stick a spear in her doctor. She doesn't have a problem with the cancer at all. So that's why people need to keep that kind of power. And families also need to allow that. I mean, I know a boy who throws up at red lights.
Yeah.
His father said, why are you vomiting? Because a red light goes on when they're treating me with radiation.
Uh-huh. A little Pavlovian response there.
Yeah, it was the father's decision and the doctor's decision. They didn't say to this young man, do you want to go through this? And, you see, if he had drawn a picture ahead of time and it looked like a monster, I would have said, okay, we got to change this image so when you go, you won't have all these troubles. Because, again, there are people who draw treatment as heaven in God's hands, all these beautiful images. And believe me, they don't have any side effects while somebody else is going through hell because of their image of the treatment. Lady drew the devil giving her poison.
The drawing is the image that you see, the person, the patient themselves see. And sometimes these come through your dreams, right? We have to take a quick break.
Yes.
I want to talk about dreams, and I want to get to that, and I want to get to why we need these pictures. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking to Dr. Bernie Siegel. We'll be back in just a few on WTBQ. Looking for a dependable used car?
Skills and imagination. Saturdays at 11:10 a.m. on WTBQ.
Hello and welcome back to Shannon's Corner. I am Shannon Devereaux-Sanford, and don't go anywhere. We're talking about healing today, and we're talking with Dr. Bernie Siegel, who, of course, you know because he has written so many books, and he is so well known for his healing. And Dr. Siegel, before we took a break, we were talking about this book, which is about pictures and drawing pictures before surgery or drawing pictures right. When you're ill and what that unconsciously reveals. And you also talk in here about your dreams. And for all of us, and we dream, and sometimes they're very interesting, but do they have some sort of meaning, and can they, along with withdrawing, help us heal?
Yes. And let me say this. You can ask your kids to just draw the home and family. It doesn't have to be a physical illness, and you'll know how your kids feel about life. The reason I say that again is a quickie. A child with cancer said, I don't get enough time for my family. She drew the family. She's sitting on a chair by herself. The family's on a sofa with an empty seat next to them she could be on.
Mm.
When the parents saw that, they devoted much more time to her. But you see, it wasn't me criticizing or them arguing and telling me what they do all day.
Right, right.
Their daughter's image. Now, what was your question again?
That's okay. No, but that's a very interesting thing. So what your subconscious is doing is putting out there very true, but very often very subtle messages that you have to look at, and that's complete evidence. You don't have to prove.
Yeah, from the standpoint, one of the reasons I wrote this book, I want doctors to look at it.
Uh-huh.
It's obvious there's anatomy in it. There are pictures where people know they have a disease.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they don't know they're drawing that. But they're drawing the symbols that a doctor would realize because they know anatomy. So, again, I have never met a doctor who has been told while being trained that about 100 years ago, Carl Jung interpreted a dream and diagnosed a man's brain tumor correctly. Now, I think doctors ought to be told that. So you'd say to a patient, what are you dreaming? I mean, women would come in and say, I know my mammogram looked fine, but I know something is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, they knew. One woman in another book that I have called The Book of Miracles, she went to bed. In her dream, a woman walks in, dark-skinned with a foreign accent, and says, you have a lump in your right breast. You need to have it checked.
Mm.
She wakes up, feels her breast is a lump. She goes to the hospital, diagnosed as cancer. They tell her, the doctor who's going to take care of you will be in a few minutes. You know who walks into the room?
Mm-hmm.
The doctor from her dream.
No
kidding.
The doctor
from India with the foreign accent. Now you say, how does that happen? But the body can only speak through those images, you see. So it's psychological as well as physical ways. But if I call it keeping the lid on, if people, you know, don't want to close their eyes, don't want to do guided imagery, don't want to meditate, don't want to know about dreams, then consciousness keeps the lid on and the unconscious and the body cannot speak to you.
Why don't doctors want to know this, and why are they not trained at all for that? I mean, that sounds like very important information for doctors to pay attention to that part of the human being. I mean, why are you taught to exclude that?
I think we spend time on disease. I mean, I can show you ads for medical journals. It says, I'm depressed, unable to cope. I went to see my physician. He prescribed an antidepressant.
Right.
I feel better now.
Yeah, exactly.
I wrote to the company. I wrote to the journal, medical journal. I said, hey, don't you think the doctor should say what's going on in your life and not just say, here's a pill, goodbye? But it's the training is about disease, not about people and their experience.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody listening to this show, if they have a problem, ask themselves, what words would I use to describe my problem? See, I'm not interested in the diagnosis. It could be a headache, a heart attack, or cancer. What are you going through? What words would you use? And you'd be amazed at how those words fit people's lives.
Well, so if someone said, I'm going through hell, or I'm going through, I don't know, turmoil, I mean, would that...
No, that's all right. I'd say, what else in your life fits the turmoil and the hell? We got to eliminate that. See, when somebody says failure, thinking her body has failed her, I said, no, what about your life? Oh, my parents committed suicide when I was a child. I must have been a failure as a child.
So you're saying that all of that goes into our body, all of our hurts through the years,
yes,
and all of the pain and all of the things we stuff down and don't want to talk about, and that can create disease?
Yes. Psychotherapists know this.
Uh-huh.
Alice Miller, in one of our books, wrote, a childhood is stored up in our bodies, and someday the body will present its bill. So, I mean, we know it from organ transplants.
Right, that's true. Yeah, you have a wonderful story about that in your book with the beer.
Yes.
So, I mean, so if somebody's listening to us and they are going through cancer, or someone in their family is, and they should get this book, The Art of Healing, Uncovering Your Inner Wisdom and Potential for Self-Healing, should they give it to their doctor, or should they just read it, absorb it, and stand up for themselves?
I would say, I'd get a copy for the doctor.
Yeah.
Because if the doctor responded to it, that's the kind of doctor you want.
Uh-huh.
You know, the ones who say, oh, that's crazy, I can't accept that. They're not learning from, you know, their mistakes or anything else.
Yeah.
And I found that the best doctors are criticized by family, nurses, and patients because they listen and change their behavior versus making excuses.
When you were a practicing physician, did you listen?
Well, I used to think I was the worst doctor because all the nurses were telling me what I was doing wrong, and so were the patients.
Mm.
And then they said, no, you're not the worst one. We know you're listening, so we tell you.
Uh-huh.
I mean, a simple example I think is in the book where I walked into a room really worried about this patient. She said, what's wrong? I said, what do you mean, what's wrong? She said, your face is all wrinkled and, you know. I said, yeah, I'm thinking about how to help you. She said, think in the hallway and smile when you come in here. You see?
So you
and
can
that
learn.
That taught me something.
That did teach you something. So you can learn through your patients. So now everything you have learned, you are giving out in your books. You are certainly a prolific writer. You have written. How many books have you written? This is your, what, 10th?
Number 13.
13. Wow. Well, that is definitely to our advantage. And everybody certainly knows who you are. Love, Medicine, and Miracles was a wonderful book. And this is too. The Art of Healing, Uncovering Your Inner Wisdom and Potential for Self-Healing. I have it on Shannon's Corner so everybody can go there and get it. And
thank
just
you.
Click on directly to a link to you. And everybody get the book. And anybody has anybody in their family or themselves just want to learn about healing and some wonderful techniques, definitely get this book. It's a terrific book. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Bernie Siegel.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Everybody, thank you for listening to us today. Terrific book, The Art of Healing. And until next time, don't forget to make good choices.